Off the Ball Breakfast.
You would say Georgia's.
Did I say that? You said that. You literally said that.
That's what
Georgia's is slightly better competition.
Your eyes just told me that. I'm just translating it.
Wow. Live every weekday morning from 7:30 on your smart speaker. Just ask Alexa to play OTB Sports Radio.
It's time to turn our attention, though, to the boxing, because, of course, tonight at Madison Square Gardens in New York, probably around 3:30 or so Irish time tonight, if you're going to stay up or get up quite early to watch this one. It is Katie Taylor against Amanda Serrano, part three, promoted by Jake Paul's MVP Promotions tonight. It's an 8-fight card, an all-female card, 5 of those unified world title bouts. Tonight, welcome to the show, Kevin Byrne of the Irish Sun. Morning, Kevin. How are things?
Morning, lads. Things are good. How are you keeping?
Excellent. We're flying it. So, I mean, there's a lot of talk, a lot of build-up ahead of this one. And remarkably, for a fight in which, you know, Taylor has a 2-0 record against Serrano, it still has a serious bit of juice because, I guess, you know, the decision in particular one of those fights has been, called into question by Amanda Serrano and her team a little bit in the interim.
Yeah, absolutely, Shane. Like, obviously, most great trilogies go in squared at one all, right? So you go back to Ali Frazer or even Arturo Gatti against Mickey Ward, and they were one all before the third fight, and you know somebody was desperately trying to get the edge. This one obviously is 2-0 to Taylor, as she's delighted in telling Serrano all week and all through the build up. Every time Serrano kind of kicks up a fuss about how she feels the decisions, you know, went the wrong way, Katie Taylor just puts up her two fingers and says, "No, it's 2-0 to me." That's what the judges saw. But there were obviously enough moments in both fights to, I suppose, justify another go at it. Over the course of the two fights, first fight in particular, the most hurtful punches were landed by Serrano that fifth round. She nearly got a knockdown, or, you know, she nearly took Taylor out of it almost. She nearly scored a knockdown then in the final round. And then the hurtful punches in the second fight, you could argue maybe some of them went to Serrano as well, particularly at the end of a first round when she staggered Taylor and took what had been quite a close round. So she's the brute force in this chemistry set. Whereas Taylor, you know, Taylor obviously won both fights, but they were so controversial and there were so many differences of opinions around the world that you could obviously see why a third fight would go again. They, you know, they were speaking about it in the ring immediately after their fight in Arlington last November. And here we are, like 8 months later, you know, the trilogy fight.
It is amazing, yeah, because Serrano threw, I think, over 100 more punches in the AT&T Stadium last November. The question that was obvious for me is, like, why is Katie Taylor doing this if she's 2-0? But she answered that herself in the press conference, Kev, where I wouldn't say it was spiky, because I think that's too strong of a word, but it's certainly a confident Katie Taylor that wasn't afraid to bite back when necessary.
It was definitely as spiky as a Katie Taylor press conference will get. Like, you know, away from the ring, these two are good pals. They've done a lot of the US TV media circuit and a lot of social media things together. So away from the cameras, they're sitting down and talking about what they have in common rather than what divides them. But what divides them is business, legacy. And yeah, when they get in the ring, they just come up with this crazy mix. Like, why is Taylor taking it at 2-0? She's just risking it, really, right? So commercially, it's the best fight out there for her. It's the best payday she can get in boxing, times a couple of brackets. There's nobody else who can really touch the payday that Amanda Serrano and her promotional team of Jake Paul and MVP Promotions can deliver. I suppose sporting wise, they've been so close. There hasn't been much to split them over the 20 rounds so far. And I think, as well as that, for legacy reasons, Taylor is very much interested in having a trilogy. She knows her history in boxing. She has her idols. She looks back at the past and, you know, she studies fighters of the past to give herself an edge in the modern day. So I think the idea of being in a trilogy very much appealed to her. She knows that Serrano will test her as much as anyone out there. You know, getting the headline at Madison Square Garden, an all women's card, historic in that, which has never happened before. That's got to appeal to her too. So I can see why it's compelling to go back for a third bite at this. You know, money, integrity, legacy, the whole thing is all there.
How much money is Katie Taylor reportedly going to earn here?
Not sure. I've seen varying reports. I've seen as high as $9 million. I find that unlikely. I've seen $4, $5, $6 million. I'd say it's somewhere around $5 or $6 million, but often the figures come out after the fight, so I suppose we'll wait and see. But a good payday, much higher than, I suppose, when Katie Taylor turned professional at the end of 2016 following the Rio Olympics. Serrano came out and said, oh, we're delighted that Taylor has turned pro. She could be our saviour in women's boxing. Around that time, Serrano was about 30 fights deep into her career and sometimes was earning a grand for a fight, you know what I mean, or $2,000 for a fight. It was like real at the lower end of the scale in terms of women's boxers were, female boxers were earning very little. Even at the start, Taylor wasn't earning big purses. I think the first $1 million purse for women's boxing was in 2022 for the first fight. So that was a big step, right? Six figures. And now they're multiplying that by five and six, you know, for their fights. But a rarity, you know, not everybody in boxing is earning that much. And, you know, these are the very much the 1% has yet to trickle down to other female fighters. But it's serious wedge for the two girls, yeah.
Is it true that Serrano's camp wanted a 3-minute round? But Katie Taylor's got 2 minutes, 10 rounds.
Yeah, I think they were looking for that. Serrano's fought once, 3 minutes, 12 of them. And they seemed to, Serrano's adamant that they agreed after the last fight that they'd go for 12 threes for this one. And she's adamant that there was an agreement. And then she says Taylor reneged on it. But I suppose Taylor kept her champion's privilege. She's won twice over 10 by 2 minute round distance. So she had the privilege of being the champion and insisting that that was the case. However, Serrano's kind of swan around New York, acting as the champion by all accounts this week. She's going into the ring second, I think, which is what the champion normally does. She, from reading some of the pieces from the journalists over there, like it's a Serrano fight week with Katie Taylor, I suppose, and that comes with the territory when you're the home fighter. She's, you know, from Brooklyn via Puerto Rico, it's promoted by her team. So yeah, she's going around like she's the number one, and she's entertaining the prospect of a Katie Taylor fight, even like not accepting full challenger status, but, you know, going in like a champion against a fighter she's lost against twice. It's going to be interesting. I think it speaks to a little bit of a fragility as well. It's like, I don't feel I lost the first two fights, so I'm going to act like the champion anyway. And fair enough, manifest it. You know, I'm all for manifesting it, but I think she could do with the challenger mentality a little bit more, because she could come unstuck with it, really.
And, you know, Katie has said in one of the press conferences that she's sick of her, as in Serrano's whining, and as you said, the word spiky as Katie Taylor's press conferences can get. There's obviously respect between the two of them, Kevin, but like, has it turned into anything more than that? Has it turned into a little bit of hatred over the years, or is this all the whole circus of boxing, the fiasco, the trying to sell a fight, or is there an element of souring of relations over the years, I suppose?
I think some fighters go in and it's all put on for the cameras, right? You know, they're great mates outside of boxing, and then they go in, the cameras are on, and they pretend to have a rivalry. I don't think that's what's happening here. I think they go in front of the cameras, or they're interviewed and they're asked telling questions in front of the other about their fights. And then they, you know, particularly Serrano will say things that offend Taylor, and Taylor will hit back. And she's listening to Serrano talking about the use of the head, or the judges didn't agree with what everybody else agreed. And it does needle Taylor a little bit, so she has to hit back. I don't think it's proper hatred, right? But it's intense sporting rivalry. They're having their third fight. There's already plenty of discussions of will there be a fourth. It's more speculation from fans, and questions are being asked, like, what happens if Serrano wins this? She's 2-1 down. Did he go a fourth time? Both of them seem to pour cold water on that prospect there at the recent press event, saying, nah, I think we've seen enough of each other at this stage. And they're probably looking forward to, you know, collecting their paycheck and going on to probably being good friends after all this is over, you know, because they're the ones who've shared this historic trilogy. They're the only ones who know what it feels like to be in the place they're in.
Why isn't this on Croke Park?
They just seem to be unable to get it done. I mean, I saw Frank Smith from Matchroom Promotions on with Ariel Helwani during the week, and they were just kind of complaining about Croke Park being too expensive, Dublin being one of the most expensive cities in the world to hold an event. Just never really got off the ground. And for all the talk after every Taylor fight, especially if Taylor fights in the autumn or the winter, because she's got a 6-month window or something that, until she fights. I think it was the case after the second Cameron fight, and the case after the last Serrano fight. You're looking ahead then, oh, what's Katie Taylor going to be doing in 6 months? And oh, that's bang in the middle for Croke Park. But Croke Park say serious discussions never took place. Matchroom say discussions took place and it was just too expensive. So that looks to be completely dead in the water now. Quite disappointing for Taylor, because, you know, she's going to finish up her career soon enough, I suppose, having ticked off absolutely everything on the bucket list. You know, changed the game of the amateurs, changed the game of the professionals, picked up huge checks, headlined all around the world. But yeah, that Croke Park thing, it's an itch she probably won't get to scratch.
You were talking about champion's privilege there, and she's 2-0, as we know. her lightweight belts are on the line here. Her super lightweight belts are on the line. Is it a flex? Is it the ultimate flex in boxing that Katie Taylor just is not that bothered about these terms, that she doesn't have a home fight, that she's playing basically an away fight here? Or is she selling herself short?
It's somewhere in the middle, yeah, because, I mean, I'd agree that it's complete flex, right? And this doesn't matter. And if you need all this reassurance, good for you, you know, I'll give it to you. And then, you know, watch you squirm down under the pressure, right? So that could be Taylor's point of view. But then I was watching the weigh-in there last night, and it kind of rankled to see, you know, Serrano coming in second and being introduced almost as the number one. I was watching it, and I never thought I'd feel anything towards that. But it just looked a bit silly to me watching it back last night. But look, I think it is a good flex, Colin. Yeah, it's a good point. She doesn't really care about that sort of fanfare. This is all just things, to get the fight off the ground, to get this check, to get this contest, to get it happening at Madison Square Garden. Taylor just obviously rolled over. There's a couple other things as well, though. So you mentioned it was a defense of her light welterweight belt, or super lightweight, normally at 140 pounds. In their first fight, they met at 138 pounds, a bit of a catchweight, just to signify the fact that Serrano was stepping up from a couple of weights. And Serrano's a great shapeshifter. She's well able to go up and down. But this one's lower. It's at 136. So it's basically a lightweight fight. It's a pound over the lightweight limit. So it will bring them closer together as well. I think at the weigh-in as well, though, tellingly enough, Serrano was the one who was a bit slower to the scales. So she's the one who probably found making weight a bit harder for this one. She was bang on the limit of 136. Taylor was a couple ounces off it. But yeah, this is effectively like a lightweight fight masquerading as a light welterweight contest. It's a pound over the lightweight limit.
Do you expect, Kevin, a different game plan from either fighter? Like, you think back to the first fight at this very venue, and Serrano was able to visibly hurt Katie Taylor in that fight. Like, does she return, you know, to the tactics of that night, Serrano? Or how do you see this playing out? Is it going to be similar, the all action sort of thing we've been used to with these two?
I think all action for sure, yeah. I mean, in some of Taylor's fights, we've seen that she's definitely better in repeat fights. So you look back at her first fight with Delphine Persoon, very close fight. A lot of people thought Taylor lost it when she became undisputed lightweight champion. I had it a draw. Then in the second fight, I felt she was quite dominant. She won 7-3 or thereabouts. First Cameron fight, she lost. Then she came out, changed her game plan. Taylor's very good at making adjustments. The more she knows about an opponent, the better she is. She came out and she fought a different fight in the second fight. But maybe there's just something, it's so close, and something in each other's personality that just brings out the fighting beast in Serrano and Taylor. I think Taylor probably was a bit better in the second fight with Serrano, but it was such a crazy night, you know, with the cuts, the point deduction. It didn't follow any particular script. I think in this one, I'm not sure what sort of adjustments Serrano can make, right? So she's a little bit flat-footed. She's got big, powerful backhand. She's going to be throwing bombs. She says she's going to fight differently, but I haven't seen any evidence that she can make serious adjustments. She needed to make adjustments to win the last fight. And instead of making those adjustments, I just heard her corner moaning and groaning. And this is probably where the whining factor comes from. Her brother-in-law and coach, Jordan Maldano, they just kept complaining about use of the head from Taylor and just complained about it. And I didn't find it a positive action in the corner. Like, a trainer gets, you know, 40 seconds to talk to his fighter between the time to get to the corner to sit down, and then they have to stand up to fight again. You know, in the 1 minute duration, you get 30 or 40 seconds really to talk to your fighter, calm them down, give them a game plan for the next round. And I just found there was a lot of complaining. It wasn't too positive. Now, I'm sure, you know, in their 12-week training camp, they've had a lot of time to pick apart the last two fights, see what they can do differently. But I'm not sure Serrano can do much differently. But, you know, what she's done so far has come really close to working. As for Taylor, she seems to make her adjustments in-ring. If the first round hasn't gone well, the second round, she can change it up for the third. She can fight differently. She can fight in your face, go on the back foot and catch Serrano. So I think the edge is towards Taylor in it. But I can see why Serrano's the betting favourite. She's 3 years younger at 36. Taylor's just getting that little bit older at 39. But some of her most positive performances have come in the last couple of years. I think the Cameron rematch, you know, avenging her first defeat, I think that's a much overlooked win in Katie Taylor's career. It's one of her very best. And last time against Serrano, with everything to prove, you know, in Texas on a completely pro Serrano card, you know, on an MVP bill, she managed to win that one as well. So yeah, it's going to be fascinating, really.
I'm on Ticketmaster here, lads. If you're in the New York area, you can buy a ticket in section 316 row 2 for $43. Or if you're feeling flush, you can also buy a ticket for $2,500 in the front row. Is this thing going to sell out, Kev?
You, when you hear ticket reports like that, and I was seeing last night as well, yeah, tickets were available for around the $40 mark, so it probably won't sell out. It'll come close. I hope they've got a strategy for like last minute giveaways or whatever, but I'm not too sure. I think it'll do big numbers, right? The first fight did 20,000 nearly in Madison Square Garden. The last one was seen around the world. I've no doubt it's going to do massive numbers around the world on Netflix. And I do hear it's being promoted very heavily in New York. You know, we saw those inflatables of them like 50 foot high or whatever at the Oculus. It's on the top of every taxi plate. It's on screens in Times Square. But how many people, will they have a big walk-up crowd? You know, who knows? I couldn't give you a prediction on the numbers who are going to show up, but this is probably a TV event as well, isn't it? It's such a big thing that it's being promoted and screened by Netflix. Like DAZN came into boxing as, we'll be the Netflix of boxing. That's what Taylor used to fight on. Well, now it's on actual Netflix. You know, beat that.
Yeah. That's the thing. Convenience is so attractive for people too, because a lot of people have Netflix as is. You don't have to do anything special for this. Same here in Ireland as well. You just log in. Away you go. You can watch the fight if you want.
Yeah, of all the streamers, it's the one that seems to have landed, and people are cutting their, you know, people are trying to save money and they're cutting this subscription service and that one. But Netflix seems to be safe. I don't know. It's a staple at this stage, isn't it?
Are you excited for the fight?
Yeah, genuinely. I mean, I think of a trilogy, the two fights so far have been absolute crackers, fight of the year candidates. I can't see the third not delivering. Right. Yeah, it's a good card overall. I think it's a world record card with 17 world titles. I think that's a Guinness Book of World Records entry. 17 world titles on the line. There's some good fights on the undercard. All female affair, so it's going to be quite different. Bit of British interest on it as well. Chantelle Cameron, Ellie Scottney, Savannah Marshall on it. So names we'd be quite familiar with on this side of the water. Alicia Baumgartner's in the chief support. And it's all going to be building towards a Taylor versus Serrano cracker, I think. Different commentary team as well, so we mightn't be getting as annoyed by the dulcet tones of the lovely Rosie Perez, but I think she just got the last call wrong. And beamed around the world. This is a horrible, disgraceful robbery. She actually said it was going to be a stain on Taylor's legacy, which I think she walked back, but, you know, she said what she said, I suppose, which is, quite a brutal comment, really, you know, for a fighter who's just won in a close affair.
Yeah, 100%. Kevin, enjoy tonight. Thanks a million for jumping on this morning.